I want to get into some college football here. First off, any extended thoughts on Matt Campbell that I find, obviously it's one of the big news of the day. Matt Campbell lands with Penn State. I think it's a home run hire. I think they fell into it, which is, it kind of makes it even grosser. It is failing upward. It is the person that, instead of getting like fired from their job and then they end up in like a great job, you're like, oh, that's awesome. I'm glad it worked out for that person. We see it in media all the time, it feels like, Nick, where you're just like, all right, you got fired. That stinks. This happens a lot in this business. But then it's like, oh, look at them. They landed a nice, cushy job. Instead, it sounds like the guy that like rage quit with like no backup plan, no idea what they were going to do, and then all of a sudden ended up with like a dream job or a dream situation. That's what Penn State feels like to me, because they don't deserve someone as good as Matt Campbell.
No, like, dude, this time yesterday, like it kind of seemed like Brian Daboll was like the leader in the clubhouse, and like that would have been like a gigantic meme. Everybody would have made fun of it because of how Daboll's time in the National Football League ended this season with the Giants.
It so, just would have like, been Matt Rhule 2.0.
Yeah, like everybody could have just pointed their finger at it and laughed at it, but now it's like I want to do that, but I can't because I actually do really like Matt Campbell, and I think this is a really good hire for Penn State. Now, like, is this going to put them in the same stage in the Big Ten as like an Ohio State, even in Oregon? Like, I don't think so. I don't think that this does that for them yet.
I don't know if it does or doesn't, but I do know in like conversations around Penn State now, we all found out they had like $400 million to spend. They have an insane amount of money in that trust that they've been building up in their own version of the NIL fund that they have. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they just start spending money hand over fist. I'm not saying they go full Texas Tech where immediately out of the gate, they just seem like they are spending more money than anyone can even comprehend. But it also wouldn't shock me if after a year from now, they are one of the top spenders in the sport.
Yeah, it kind of makes you think, like, if they were waiting up, like, how badly do they hate James Franklin? Like, was James Franklin really a dead man walking? Because I saw that, too, with the $400 million, and my mind immediately went, like, to the place of, well, you could have spent that. You could have helped out the guy a little bit.
Well, I think they thought that they were trying to help out the guy a little bit. Like Abdul Carter last year. Yeah. This year they had the best offensive line, in my opinion, in college football. They entered the season with what I believe to be was the best 1-2 running back tandem, the best offensive line, and then a quarterback in Drew Aller, local kid. I don't want to dog on him, but like a guy, they paid a lot of money for Drew Aller, I'm sure. It didn't work out, but like they were spending money. It's just, I think that's where the frustration with James Franklin came in, is they were opening up the coffers.
And with Drew Aller too, like, and I get he didn't live up to the expectations and then ultimately got injured, but like, it looked like they were following that same path of like, Michigan, you got it done because you had a veteran team of a bunch of guys that immediately went to the National Football League. Then last year with Ohio State and all the first round draft picks and then even second round picks that the Buckeyes had from that national championship team, it kind of seemed like it was all set up for it to be Penn State's turn. So when it was alarmingly clear that it was not going to be Penn State's turn, where they were effectively eliminated from the college football playoff by week 8 of the season, like, yeah, they probably did have to fire.
Here's what I hate about college football now, though, Nick, and this, it's bothersome to me, and this is maybe why, as we talk about Ohio State and Indiana, maybe why we need to cherish some more of these big time games, even if we've talked like a Big Ten title game is like an exhibition, like a week 4 matchup is what it feels like. You can buy your way into contention. And I don't like this for college football. Texas Tech spends a lot of money, they're in. Indiana spends a lot of money, they're in. I saw a report earlier today, it talked about how Michigan State just received a $300 million donation from one of their big boosters. And I'm like, okay, you know what my first thought wasn't? It wasn't, oh, how is Michigan State going to ever turn this program around? It's, oh, so they hired Pat Fitzgerald, a guy who I think is a scumbag. Ask me about the car wash later on, guys. But they hire Pat Fitzgerald, and all right, they're going to be really good in a year or two.
Yeah, because they're going to buy players.
They're going to buy players.
And that was my whole thing. Like, for the people that were super spooked about Brian Hartline leaving for USF, I'm like, okay, sure. Like, I'm sure Brian Hartline will do good things at USF. Like, I think he can be a good head coach. He's a good recruiter, specifically in that Southern Florida area where a lot of these receivers come from. Like, I'm sure he'll be able to get a couple of those guys. But at the end of the day, like, the Mid-American Conference right now, Jonathan, they have yet to sign even a 4-star so far ever since this national signing day happened earlier this week. So, like, all of the big fish are going to continue to go to the Ohio States of the world.
Yeah, and I don't begrudge them for it. I'm very get off my lawn about this era of college football. I don't like what it's become. I know I'm not alone out there. I just know most people that agree with me aren't in your age bracket.
So, I'm almost starting to accept it just because, like, it's so far gone at this point. Like, there's no way to get it back to what it was even 5 years ago.
Well, and even, again, I don't mind guys getting money. That's not the issue here. The issue is when all these players have agents, and then if they don't get the amount of money that they want or the playing time they want, they go to the coach and say, I'm going to go to a different school that will. Like, it feels broke to me in a way that I just don't care for. And yes, there was a part of me that I used to like. I liked the pageantry of it all. I liked the idea that you're playing for your school. But I've gone as far as to say, I don't even know why these guys go to school at this point.
Well, and
they should just be independent contractors. I don't get it at this point.
Well, and this week kind of makes the entire thing even more gross when you look at what's happening
check,
with
like
this.
The janitor gets a check, and then we go about our day.
When you look at what's going on with Legend Bay, with the Ohio State thing, where he wants to go to – he wants to be in Columbus. He wants to be a Buckeye. He's 17 years old, and his mom and his older brother are reportedly not – letting that happen. Like, he is put out there on his Instagram. I guess his...
What do you mean they're not letting it happen?
They will not... His mom, because he's not 18, his mom will not sign off on his letter of intent.
It's like a guardian
slip? To Ohio State. They're forcing him to go to Tennessee. So technically, right now, he's committed to going to Tennessee.
Oh, but he's
going
to turn 18 by the time he gets to make his choice, right?
He turns 18 in 20 days. In 20 days, he's going to be a Buckeye. But, like, just that in of itself, it shows how discombobulated this entire college football landscape has become. Because, like, I'm sure there's pretty big dollars at play here too.
Yeah, but it's ruining it for me, but it's also ruining it for me in the idea that now I can tell which team is going to be good years down the road based off of who I see is getting big money from boosters.
And I think it's just
like Texas
be the
Tech should
brands.
Not be as good as it is this quickly and this right away.
And it's just going to be
just,
like,
it shouldn't.
It's going to be Ohio State. It's going to be Bama. And I know they've kind of had their struggles with it a little bit, but something tells me that they're going to be able to spend a little bit at some point.
I mean,
soon.
But people are going to vomit all over themselves trying to talk all these good things about Cignetti this weekend. Google me. Okay, great. Google this. You spent a lot of money. Yeah, congratulations. You paid Mendoza a bunch of money, and so you're able to pick up exactly where you left off, and that's why Indiana – look at Indiana's roster. Have you guys pulled it up? The reason why this game is a 4.5-point spread, they have talent everywhere. They score 45 points a game. That's the second most in all of college football. They put up yards like you wouldn't believe. This is Oregon of 10 years ago. Yeah. It is insane what's on this roster. It's not Cignetti being something special. This was a know-nothing coach for a million years, winning at schools you and I would never even dream of visiting, okay? Hey, but he got a lot of money influxed in there. It's like Indiana's always been a basketball school. Now they're a football school. It's not Cignetti's magic. All of a sudden, they had an influx of cash, and you can follow the green brick road. I don't know. Maybe I'm going to miss a lot of the blue bloods, and this is part of why I have a hard time even in the NFL, where I'm like rooting against the Chiefs at the current moment. It's like rooting against the Chiefs is fun until the playoffs happen and Patrick Mahomes is sitting on his couch watching these games, you know? I don't know how I feel this upcoming college football playoff when it's Indiana against Texas Tech, and I'm like, this isn't what I signed up for. This isn't what I think I want the sport to become. Vanderbilt's in play? Vanderbilt?
Vanderbilt just flipped a 5-star quarterback.
From Alabama?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was going to Georgia.
What is going on? Like, that's not how the sport is supposed to be done. And so, like, yes, a lot of this is me playing catch up to the idea that this is the new reality. And I get it. I might as well be Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino right now. But the whole thing just bothers me.
At some point, it's laughable, but it's true. Like, they still call this amateur sports. Like the NCAA still tries to sell you that these are student athletes and all of this. Like, just become affiliated with the National Football League. Like, let college football just become what the G League is to the NBA, kind of.
I mean, it's a thought. I'm open to anything.
Because they're making the same amount. Like, they're same amount of money.
That's why I say I don't even know why they have the bother with these guys going to school. Like, it's like Mendoza's a fun story. He's got two different masters.
Yeah.
Like, from a school perspective, he's accomplished a lot.
Really
smart
kid.
Leave that option open. Okay, if they want to go to school, great, fine. But you should also then give them the opportunity to take the value of what the school is, $70,000 a year tuition for Indiana, let's say. I imagine it's somewhere in that ballpark. And if you don't want to go, great. You don't have to go to class. You cash the $70,000 check, and you go about your day.
It's a dangerous game to play, though, because I bet
there,
you...
But we're there, though.
But a lot of 17-year-olds, like, at 17...
And they should have that option.
At 17, I would have signed up for the $70,000 for 4 years.
And that's all I'm saying. You should have that option. That's how I see it. The way that this is set up right now, again, I'm in a weird way, I'm in favor of Just pay him even more money if you want from this setup. But what are we doing the charade for? What are we doing this big song and dance for? That's where you lose me a little bit. All right, we are going to get into the game, though, and then obviously we'll have more on this game a little bit later on. Joshua Perry, he was on yesterday with us. I don't know if you caught any of it or not, but, man, he had me feeling better about the idea that Mendoza could just come in there and make everyone's lives a living hell on Saturday. He seemed to think this game was all about the run game for Indiana, and that was going to be the key and the focus. In fact, he made it seem more like Mendoza was a passenger along for the ride than he was the main feature.
Wow. That's kind of surprising to hear, just because when I think of this game, I think, like a lot of people, you're trying to figure out who's going to come out of this the Heisman Trophy winner, right? Like, that's how this game's been marketed. That's how this game's been sold. That, like, if Julian Sayin can show out against this Indiana team that is very talented, you probably have to give him the Heisman Trophy. And I think the same thing could be said for Fernando Mendoza. If you could put up some points on this Buckeye defense, like, you probably deserve the trophy. So to think that it could be like a lower scoring run centric game, kind of fascinating angle.
From a Browns perspective, are you rooting for Mendoza to look good?
Tactically, no, right? Because I got the New Orleans Saints who need a quarterback, and I've got the Vegas Raiders need a quarterback still in front of me.
You think if he looks too good the way it's set up right now, then you have no chance of Mendoza.
Right? Like, right now, I've got if the draft were to be held today, I got the fifth overall pick with two quarterback needy teams in front of me.
But I would think, though, because you also have the Titans as being the number one overall pick, it's a sale. I don't know that we have to worry necessarily about the teams in front of us.
As long as they're going to package that Jacksonville pick and send it to Tennessee.
As long as the Titans hold serve and then have the number one overall pick, then we're just in a bidding war.
Yeah, but
it doesn't matter where you finish. You're just in a bidding war.
Then you're losing out on a wide receiver. You're losing out on Isaiah World to protect your young quarterback's blindside for the next five seasons.
If they think Mendoza's the guy, I'll lose out on anybody. That doesn't matter to me. If you like the quarterback, you take the quarterback.
I think there's another layer of this too. Are people that sold on Mendoza, or is he just a Kirk Cousins variant?
Well, and obviously we got like 6 months to get into that and figure that whole thing out. I've told you before, I like Dante more than I like Mendoza right now. My eyeball balls can change. Talk to me Saturday around midnight and maybe I'll be like, whoa, this Mendoza guy, pretty great. 216-474-0092. Get your thoughts in there. Twitter reactions also, they're powered by our friends over there at Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Also powered by Scheiben Jewelers is our Browns insider, Daryl Rotter. He joins us next right here on The Fan. Daryl, how are we doing today?
Hello, boys.
We got downtown Daryl tonight. Gonna paint the town red from what a little birdie told me.
I do have plans this evening.
I love downtown Daryl.
Wait, so is this a scenario where Daryl can see us?
Yes, Daryl can see us right now. I think if he's activated it or not. I don't know. Have you activated it? You're there? Yeah.
I can see you both. There's Tweedledee. There's Tweedledum. There you are.
Well, which one's which there? I guess it really doesn't matter, does it?
Well, you're Tweedledee, and Nick is Tweedledum.
Good.
If the other Nick was in the chair, he'd still be Tweedledum.
Well, now it just seems hateful, Daryl. You know what? Now scratch it. You're done at 3:20. We're moving you back to 6:00. We're going to ruin your Friday night plans now, okay, Daryl? That's the result of that. How was your day in Berea? What'd you learn?
It was okay. I mean, Myles Garrett is chasing some history on Sunday. We'll see if he can it just seems weird. He's four sacks away, and we're acting like it's no big deal because, well, he's had a five-sack game. He's had a four-sack game this year. We're just acting like, go out and get four sacks against Tennessee Titans, set the all-time single-season sack record. No big deal, right? The Titans have given up 48 sacks. Cam Ward has been sacked 48 times, by far the most in the league. But, yeah, we're just acting like this is, another day at the office for Myles Garrett going out and potentially getting himself four sacks on Sunday to set that record.
Well, Daryl, do you think that this is a situation where Sunday, because the Titans are so bad and because Cam Ward is currently pacing to break Caleb Williams' sack record from a season ago, like, do you think that Myles could kind of put the entire thing to rest? And I know he's kind of chasing this number 25 as well in terms of total sacks on the season.
Yeah, I mean, he told us today that that's a number that he put together came up with a couple of years ago is something he wanted to do in a season, which is, all well and good. Certainly has the ability to get there this season. First things first, got to get the record before you start thinking about what you're going to do beyond that number. But, he is, I think, without question, the best defensive player in the game today. And I'm excited to see what he's going to be able to do against the Titans and Cam Ward.
All right, so Darryl, I heard you earlier this morning on with the boys, and you were mentioning how you want Shador to get loose with the game. And so, listen, I agree with that. I want him to be spreading the football around. I do. What are the expectations, though? Put away what you want. What do you think will happen?
I think we're going to see what we've been seeing. I hope not, but you know, just listening to how he was talking this week about the trust and the reps and all that, I don't think he's there yet. I don't think the comfort level's there yet. So I think, Jonathan, we're going to see basically what we've seen the last couple of weeks from him. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But it just doesn't sound like he is where he wants to be as far as comfortability throwing in these windows or to these windows that are there. There are plays for him to make. He's just got to go out there and make them. He's got the arm talent to do it. I don't think he has a lot of trust in what he's actually seeing out there, which complicates things for him.
Darryl, do you think if you gave the Browns truth serum, if they would regret the four-man quarterback competition? Because I feel like a lot of what Shador is saying about not having time, not having reps, like, this is all kind of preventable stuff.
Yeah, 100% is preventable, and they ended up being a waste of time, right? One guy didn't make it to the regular season. The other guy didn't make it to the end of October. So, it ultimately ended up being a waste of time. And you set both rookie quarterbacks back, but especially Shador. I don't have a lot of sympathy for Dylan Gabriel because he was getting first-team reps in OTAs.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a lot of sympathy for him. He was getting the opportunity. It's Shador that I have the sympathy for because he wasn't getting the opportunity. And there were times during training camp he was legitimately, literally throwing to the ball boys because they ran out of wide receivers as they were going through the drills with these four quarterbacks. So, you know, at some point he's got to go for it. He's got to let it rip. And he's going to make some mistakes. He's going to throw some picks. Like, that's just – that comes with the territory. But I don't want to see the training wheels on him right now. I want to see what he can do. Your season's lost. Okay, well, you throw some picks, you lose the game. What else is new? Like, you've been doing that for 26 years. What's another loss since 1999? So let's see what this kid's made of.
Do you think this game will impact any status with Kevin Stefanski?
I hard to say. I mean, look, I said it on the morning show today. I don't get the sense that the ownership group wants to make a coaching change or wants to make significant organizational changes. Now, I'm not saying that they are not going to do that. Okay, I want to be very clear. I'm not saying that. It's just they don't seem to have the appetite for it. Now, you lose to a 1-11 Titans team, might force your hand to have to do something here. But I think that, you know, right now, they'd like to just run this back with Stefanski and Barry.
Darryl, whatever happened to smart, tough, and accountable? Just because, like, I've got, you know, now members of the
coaching... Well, that only applies to Wyatt Teller now, apparently.
Yeah, because, like, dude, I've got members of the coaching staff saying that there's not enough talent on the roster, and that's why there's special teams gaffes. And then I've got a general manager who's ducking his bi-week, you know, press conference with you guys because he's evidently, you know, got his chest puffed because of one adequate draft class. Like, who's taking accountability for back-to-back debacle worth of seasons?
Yeah, well, here's the thing, and I understand where you're coming from, because I feel the same way.
Yeah, like there's finger pointing going on here now.
Well, I also feel like that, you know, sometimes you run your course, right? But I don't think that Kevin Stefanski has lost the locker room. I don't think that they've tuned him out. They certainly haven't tuned out Jim Schwartz. Bubba Ventrone, well, that might be a different thing. That is a change they have to make. If there is one change that must happen, Bubba Ventrone cannot be back next year, because this is two of the 3 years he's been here that we have had to watch his special teams be awful. And there needs to be accountability for that. And then, like you alluded to yesterday, not a great answer. I posted it on my X because I couldn't believe he said what he said. And then also, too, when he was asked about Gage LeVard, and he's like, well, considering the state of our roster, that's the best option we got. I was a little surprised by those comments because that was not a good press conference for him. I respect him speaking his mind, but that was not a good press conference for him. If he was auditioning for a leadership role in another organization, because he basically threw the front office under the bus. Here's what's ironic. Tennessee Titans, bad team, right? 1-11. They're good at special teams. The Cleveland Browns over the years, like even when they would have seasons like this, where they're winning 2, 3, 4, 5 games a year, their special teams unit was pretty good. Like, that was the one thing they could hang their hat on as a bad football team, was special teams. And so that's why I'm not buying what Bubba Ventrone is selling in that regard.
If Bubba's the only move that happens this offseason, then I'm just convinced, as back-to-back 3-win seasons, I'm just convinced that they weren't trying to win anyway.
Well, I think there's 2 more wins on the schedule.
The Bengals in Week 18 is the second one?
Yeah.
Because that actually, in an odd way, that if they start rolling here, there's an outside chance they could still be in play for the AFC North, and then Week 18 is an important game.
I know, but yeah, because they got to have this one on Sunday to get to that fourth win. I don't think they're beating the Bears. I certainly don't think that they're going to beat the Bills or the Steelers. I think that Week 18 game in Cincinnati is the one that they might be able to steal to get to that fifth win. I posted this yesterday because, you know, everyone wants to talk about Kevin Stefanski's future. I know there was some reporting about how in demand Kevin is going to be if he is indeed let go. This is not expected to be a quality hiring cycle as far as, coaches go in the National Football League, which might be a motivating factor also for the Browns to stand pat. The candidate list isn't all that great. And if you're going to fire someone, you got to have someone better to replace them. The old analogy, let's just say for the sake of this discussion, guys, Kevin Stefanski is a 6, okay, as a coach.
Okay.
Who's a 7, 8, or a 9 that's going to be out there available that's going to want this job here in Cleveland that you're going to get? And pose that same question on the general manager side, because I think that Kevin Stefanski's successor, it would be another unproven coordinator dude, and that just really doesn't excite me at this particular junction as well. I have no expectation they're going to win next season as well, and you're kind of setting this thing up for 2028, 2029, so that's why I'm kind of like, you might as well just stick with what you got here, see what the next draft looks like, whatever the quarterback is and whatnot, and revisit this a year from now. But I don't know that beyond some, coaching staff changes, that things dramatically move forward. The other thing to keep in mind is Tommy Rees here next year. Does he get a college coaching job somewhere, either as a head coach or a coordinator? So we got to watch that.
Nick loves something you said. I don't know what you said.
Going like from one excuse to another. Like it's not a good head coaching cycle. It's not a good quarterback
class. Which is what we do with the quarterback thing,
Jim. I get to sit here and just enjoy the crap that sits in front of me, and they hide behind these excuses, and it drives me nuts because they're living in their own fears, is what it comes across.
And Daryl, on top of that, this is something that I griped about with the last quarterback discussion that we had last year. It's the idea of, like, if you're just waiting for everything to be perfect, you're gonna be waiting a pretty damn long time. Like, that's not how this works. Like, you can't wait for the stars to align before you finally pull the trigger on anything.
Jonathan, like, I say every year there's a franchise quarterback in the draft, and everyone else in the NFL seems to identify them except for the Cleveland Browns. Like, I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. It's frustrating as hell, but that's just what it is. And do I trust that Andrew Berry's going to be the guy to find them? No, absolutely not. Okay, he can't draft wide receivers either. Offensive linemen, which they have to rebuild, that also not exactly his wheelhouse. Like, they got some serious issues, and I have some serious doubts that Andrew Berry's the guy to fix them. But, the salary cap situation being what it is, the back end of the Watson contract being what it is, like, there is the reality, I know this will shock some people, that the Browns just might not be an attractive job this offseason. And I think one of the quotes in that piece, I forget who wrote it, about Kevin being attractive.
Oh, Jeremy Fowler.
Jeremy Fowler. And it was a great comment. Cleveland's a hard place to win. Do you think there's a lot of reason for that?
So isn't he going to use that, though? If I was Stefanski, there's a couple things I would do. I would use the Browns as an excuse, and then I would also I would use Deshaun Watson as an excuse, and I would bring up the list of quarterbacks, and I would try to parlay that into it was an unwinnable situation. Whether we believe that or not, that's what I would try to do if I were him.
And he did the impossible twice.
And
took him to the playoffs, won 11 games.
And it might just be enough to convince a team out there that there's just no winning with the Browns, they were set up to fail.
I agree with the Stefanski assessment out there, and I do believe. I know Nick Pedone is over there rolling his eyes, and he's frustrated.
He's smiling a lot right now.
Here's what I'm going to tell you: Kevin will have a job tomorrow if he's fired. He is not going to have a hard time finding a job.
Okay, but as a head coach or as an offensive coordinator?
Either. I think he'll be a head coach.
Titans or like a good team?
He's not being the head coach
team. Well, I don't know what you got. I don't know what's going to be available this offseason, but he's going to have an opportunity to get one of those.
All right, let's put it this way. Bill's job opens up. Sean McDermott gets fired.
Buffalo would totally talk to him.
What's that?
Buffalo would totally talk to him.
Well, they'll talk to him. Is he getting that job as a head coach?
I think he could.
I think if you're a Bills fan, you're like, congratulations, we just hired the guy we replaced. We got the offensive version of the guy we just replaced.
I am a believer in Kevin Stefanski as a head coach. Do I find his post-game speeches the least bit inspiring? No, but I think he's a really good coach, and I think he could be successful if he had a quarterback to work with. And until he has that here, this is probably what you're going to get.
Yeah, but Daryl, didn't he do this to himself in a way? Because he signed up to coach a franchise quarterbacked by Baker Mayfield, and I get they thought that they could upgrade to our conversation there. They thought that Baker Mayfield was a six, and they could go get something better than that with Deshaun Watson, and it blew up, but then, like, you don't get to just continue to chase. Then they couldn't chase Joe Flacco out of town fast enough when he took him to the playoffs. So, like, to me, you don't get to keep just making these same excuses.
Have you looked at the offensive roster this year? Name me one wide receiver on this team you'd actually want to keep long term.
But then why is Andrew Berry safe?
Because
he made a draft night trade.
Listen, you're preaching to the choir. You're preaching to the choir on that one. I think Andrew Berry's done a terrible job as a GM. I think he's been awful. And I don't think one good draft class should save his bacon, but I think it's gonna. Just because I think something don't mean I believe it and agree with it, but this draft class is performing, and ownership can say, hey, look, he had draft picks and he did something with them. Whereas in the drafts were in Houston with the Texans. So, I think he's done a terrible job fortifying the offensive line, which has to be completely rebuilt next year. I think he's done a terrible job in the wide receiver room. The Amari Cooper trade was great. Outside of that, not so great. And none of his draft picks have amounted to anything in that room. He's done a good job identifying and extending players. Okay, great. Well, a lot of GMs do that. I think overall Andrew Berry's done a pretty terrible job. He inherited a team ready to win consistently, and he's a reason why they're unable to do so, and they're back to square one sitting here staring down a 3-4, and if they're lucky, maybe a 5-win season. Like, he is a big reason for that, and he shouldn't escape blame, but, I think he's got it.
All right, downtown Daryl. He's a booze hound when he's downtown these days. Enjoy your night out. Get your dancing shoes all ready to go, and we'll talk to you later. Thank you.
Cheers, boys. Enjoy the football this weekend. Well, at least probably the football on Saturday.
Yeah, well, we'll do both. I'm going to enjoy both. I know it. All right. Just have a good feeling about this weekend in both accounts. All right. Daryl Ryder brought to you by Shopman Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. I also love the visual of Daryl being like, I'm going out. I got my dancing shoes. We got these shoes that are labeled just for dancing when I paint the town red, and we're going to make it be awesome.
What brand do you think those shoes are?
Something from DSW. All right, 216-474-0092. What was Bubba Ventrone's goal? We'll do that and more next right here in the Fan. All right, so I want to play some of Bubba's clips, though. You seemed really heated about this. I honestly, none of this really surprised me. It seems like, if anything, Bubba's just at the point where he's just going to pass the buck. I think he knows that he's toast for this year, and now he's going to try to rewrite this so that maybe some people could perceive it as, well, yeah, you really didn't have much to work with, and when your initial kick returner got injured in training camp a million weeks ago, I guess that was enough. But this was Bubba Ventrone talking to the media.
For right now, what our roster looks like, I think Gage is our best option. So we have a lot of faith in him to get it right. He understands that there's a lot of pressure at that position, and we got to be able to answer the bell. And, you know, he'll put the work in, he'll put the time in to be able to do so.
Okay, so that one didn't sound too bad. That was just kind of like supportive of Gage. Let's see the next one. Let's see where this goes.
I don't know if we have a guy that is like that right now. We have some veterans that are playing in a phase or two that will be vocal at times. But yeah, we probably don't have that one guy like that right now.
Okay, well, that doesn't sound great. That's more of an insult
to
Gage than anything that Daryl just did.
Dude, like, it's such a backhanded statement that, like, those guys in your room, like, this is special teams. You know, like, these, for the most part, are where guys try to make, like, a name for themselves and an organization. And you play well on special teams, maybe you could get, you know, into the rotation in the safety room as this season is lost.
Okay, but he also wasn't wrong either. If the initial question is, do you have a special teams ace? All right, let's set it up that way. Let's do three again here, Mac. If I ask you, do you have a special teams ace? And this is his response.
I don't know if we have a guy that is like that right now. We have some veterans that are playing in a phase or two that will be vocal at times. But yeah, we probably don't have that one guy like that right now.
I really don't take much of an insult to it because he's not wrong.
No, but ask me the same question.
Should he say it?
Yeah, because ask me that question.
Okay, Nick, do we have a special teams ace?
You know, we've struggled on special teams, but I ultimately have a lot of faith in the guys in that room, and I can't think of one ace off the top of my head, but I think as a collective, we're a talented group, and we're better than what we've displayed.
Oh, really? Because when the Browns had Josh Cribbs, you could definitely think of one off the top of your head.
Well, yeah, but Josh Cribbs
I would crush you for that result, though.
I would say Johnson Bademosi back in the day.
But you get the same result as what we just did right there, though. You get the same result. Yours was just as damning as his was. But I'm not asking you to do a press conference.
I like the whole group.
Yeah,
we don't have one ace. I got an 11 aces.
And he said nice things about Gage, too. I think the problem is that he was too honest at a spot where I think people didn't want him to be honest. And so, like, I have a hard time with this because, yes, there is part of this song and dance where you can't speak the way that he spoke. You can't. You can't admit that you don't have a special teams ace. But you also can't be completely ignorant to your surroundings either, because then nobody will believe anything you say. And maybe the idea as the special teams coordinator is that you're just supposed to get up there and lie. But then I would argue, what are we even doing if that's going to be the case?
Well, I think the greater thing at hand here is that, like, special teams is actively losing you games.
Yeah.
So I don't think the solution is to sit up there and to pretty much blame the general manager and say, well, we don't have enough talent here. We don't have a special teams ace. What do you want me to do? You know,
but he isn't wrong when it comes to that, though.
Bubba, they don't have one. Here's the thing. Not only was it embarrassing that you started that game with a 66-yard punt return, mm-hmm. not only was it embarrassing that you had not just one muff punt, but two, but then the guy evidently didn't even know the rule on the kickoff where he's had toe taps on the sideline look better than anything Chad O'Shea has coached
I think what he's trying to spin this as is you know how, like, when field goal kickers, when they miss kicks, no one turns around and blames the special teams coordinator ultimately because we understand that they don't do anything with the actual field goal kickers. I think he's trying to absolve himself of any blame because of the lack of talent that is on this roster within the special teams and the players that he's afforded to use on the special teams. I talked about this with Coach Riz in the Sunday pregame show. A couple weeks back, they loaded up the special teams unit with a lot of players we know, Schlesinger, yep. Delpit, those type of guys, and it was because they had to have a response to what happened the week prior where they looked absolutely lost in that Jets game. And they've kind of taken those guys away in the past couple weeks. They had them for a week, and, like, Delpit's still there last weekend, but all the big-time players, for the most part, they then took themselves off of special teams. And I think Bubba's speaking to the frustration of that. He doesn't have the full chest to work with, and now it sounds like I'm defending Bubba Ventrone, which I don't want to be doing. It's an awful place to live.
Yeah, it's a losing proposition.
It's a losing proposition. I get it. Yeah, but, like, the reality is, in this instance, people lost their minds here. He's not wrong. They don't have the talent. Where he's wrong is speaking on it into a microphone.
Because
that's where he's wrong.
Dude, like, it genuinely came
across. But he's not wrong. They don't have the talent.
But it comes across as, like, here's another guy. What happened to smart, tough, and accountable? Because my GM isn't accountable. He's not even making himself available to the media during the bye week.
Here's the problem with this, okay? And this is why if I was trying to hire Bubba Ventrone in the future, I'd say thanks, but no thanks. Joe Brady, okay, was fantastic with Joe Burrow at LSU.
Right.
And he was fantastic last year with Josh Allen. But the argument is that every person in between, it's like, I don't know that you're very good at this job. I think you can be good at this, and even starting to struggle in Buffalo now this year. But it's like, I think you can do the job if we give you a generational talent around yourself, right? But I can say that with a lot of coaches.
Yeah, sure. You could put me on the sideline if I've got Josh Cribbs returning kicks. Absolutely.
Well, so that's where he's not helping himself.
No, you got Malachi Corley. So figure it out.
When you say the statements you say like this, what you're telling everybody is that if I have the talent on special teams, I can get the job done. And if I don't, you're going to get the results that you've been getting. And that's where the problem arises.
Which like the results you've been getting are like hilariously bad. They're not just bad.
Well,
they're
hilariously
bad.
Corley forgot he thought he was playing wide receiver with trying to keep his toes in. He was playing punt returner. You played. It's that it's the Neil Brennan bit with Ray Lewis in the elevator. You did football when you were supposed to do normal human things. You did football at the wrong time. You did wide receiver when you were supposed to be doing punt returner.
And it's like he's barely done wide receiver this year. Like you've done end around jet sweep.
Yeah.
But you haven't really done wide receiver. So I don't really get. And it all goes back to coaching. It all goes back to accountability. I don't know who's taking blame for what. I don't know who's accountable for what. Because I've got a special teams coordinator that's allowed to just sit up there after the worst special teams performance that I've ever seen. I think that's fair to say. With four different mistakes on special teams, that was the worst I've ever seen. And he's allowed to just sit there and say, well, I don't have a special teams ace, so what am I supposed to do? And that's a reflection of why the Browns are in the situation that they're in right now.
To me, it just sounded like a broken man. It sounded like a resigned man to the idea that he's going to be fired at the end of the season. Kind of, maybe this is one of those things where they've already done the firing behind closed doors. Kind of like what they did last year to the offensive line coach, Andy Dickerson.
He just vanished.
Well, I mean, it was Vrabel. Vrabel took over the offensive line. He was still in the building. He was still around, but he might as well have been the janitor. He wasn't doing anything that was useful to football productions, okay? And maybe that's already happened with Bubba. It's like, we put you up at the podium. You speak because we don't want anyone to know that your job's already been taken away. So you speak. You go ahead. You do it. But in reality, you're not really doing anything at this point. That might have already taken place. Because they just refuse to fire people in the middle of the seasons. And if not for HBO, we wouldn't even found out what happened last year between Vrabel and Dickerson.
Right.
So maybe that's just what's taking place here. But that sounded like a resigned person. That sounded like somebody that really didn't even care what the perception of himself and around the building is. Like, he just seemed like, I'll answer the questions, but I'm going to answer it the way that I feel is truthful. And that's where you get to the heart of that. That was a honest answer right there. And I get why it would make Browns fans angry, but it was at least honest. But it also sounds like somebody that's honest because he doesn't have a job anymore, or at least knows he won't have a job for very long, at least by title. All right, we're going to leave that there. I see a lot of you guys with the phone calls. Hang tight. We will get to you guys all throughout the show. If we didn't have Joe Rexroad, who's one of the best at covering the Titans and also covering all throughout college football, I'd just go right to you guys. But I can't do that because we have a Titans insider and, of course, a college football insider as well for The Athletic. Joe Rexroad, 102.5 The Game in Nashville. He joins us next right here on The Fan.